Welcome back to another episode of the Strength and Speed Podcast. I'm your host, Mudgear Hannibal Race Pro and Strength and Speed owner, Evan Preparis. We've got a guest with me on the line. Before we get to him, though, a quick word from this episode's sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Blegmits. If you're not using Blegmits for your upcoming toughest or world's toughest or just your cold weather races, check them out. They are neoprene mittens. We've got 1mm lights and we've got 3mm extremes. All of them are available on teamstrengthspeed.com. You can order them. They're the same ones that you can order from Australia, except I have them here in the U.S. Deanna sends them to me, and I help distribute them here in the U.S. So you can order those off teamstrengthspeed.com. If you order both of them at the same time, the light and the extreme, you save a couple bucks. I think it's about 10 bucks for the combo there. And then if you really want to step things up, you can also pile one of my books onto there and save even more money, because I think the books are like a third of what the price if you buy that plus the Blegmit combo. All right, let's get to today's guest. Joining me, I have Anthony Kunkel. Anthony, say hi.
Hey, man. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So Anthony is a multi-time champion, essentially ultra runner, and I kind of dove into the obstacle course racing world a couple years ago. I remember you showing up to World's Toughest Mudder, making big predictions about how far you were going to run, and I was like, this guy's out of his mind. And then the race started, and I've never seen anyone move that fast. You lapped me. I ran 90 miles that year. You lapped me, I think, twice, and it was like 8 hours into the race. And I was like, jeez, this guy is going to, if this guy keeps it up, he's going to obliterate some records. Yeah, super fast. So I've always been impressed by your speed. Obviously, you've got the endurance to match. Let's talk a little bit about more of your background first, and then we'll get into OCR, and then we'll jump into, you've got some sort of training camp slash tryouts coming up that I want to talk about. So take me way back in time. Why did we start running?
Well, I guess initially it was the most achievable varsity letter that I could get for myself with military academy aspirations as a young kid. And so just kind of like walked on and ran varsity freshman year of high school with cross country. So I guess I had some inkling that like I could be one of the seven fastest kids in a, whatever it was, like many, many thousands big, right outside Southside Chicago high school. And yeah, I kind of got to see that when we went to the 10K, there was a classic turkey trot where I'm from that was a 10K after season, and all the guys that were beating me over 5K all season long, they couldn't beat me over 10K afterward. And so I kind of had the inkling that as it got longer, I would be able to be more competitive. And then obviously getting out of the Midwest and getting into the mountains helps a lot. So yeah, I'm not sure how deep to go on all that, but I had a bunch of different ideas, and I kind of thought even from the beginning, it was, well, if I could know what it felt like to run 100 miles in, you know, 15 hours or something like that, then I would be some enlightened being, or just the subjective experience always. It was, I mean, I have logs from 16, 17, 18 years old with pretty grandiose things looking back at it of like, I just wanted to know, you know, as an 18-year-old kid, I just wanted to know what it felt like to race a 50K, like to really be like pushing up a hill, or to be breaking a competitor and feel like I was actually racing instead of just surviving over these long distances. And so the subjectivity of it has always been the driving force for me, and kind of the curiosity of what would that feel like to do X, Y, Z.
Gotcha. And so after high school, when did you start getting into like the ultra scene? Did it happen slowly, or was that like, I'm just going to...
Yeah, I mean, I graduated in June. I ran my first ultra in December.
Okay. How far?
50K.
50K.
I absolutely had my taint handed to me too. It was like, it was not pretty, but that was the best possible scenario, because that's what really gave me the bug. It's like, all right, I was caught sleeping this time, but you know, I'm learning so much each time. So yeah.
And then when, so what year was that?
That was 2010.
Okay. And then when did you, because I mentioned in your bio, you're a multi-time national champion. One, I didn't do it justice. Explain to people what you, a little more about you, like some of your major achievements in the ultra running
world. Yeah, so every other year, I guess we'll start with that. Every other year, the International Olympic Committee puts on a 100K road world championship. And a lot of the developed world will fund their athletes and potentially even training expenses and all of it. Turns out Team USA really doesn't. but that's kind of a whole separate chapter in and of itself. But with the every other year format, so every even year there's 100K world champs, and I was like, I believe I was the seventh man on a six man team. I was like first alternate or something like that for the 2016 100K world champs. And then in 2018, I was like, all right, well, there's four races I think that are eligible. One of them was Comrades in South Africa, and I just didn't have the backing for that at the time. And so that was off the table. And the other two were the JFK 50 miler, the 50 mile national champs. And then the final one with an auto entry, so the third one, I guess, was the 100K national champs. So in 2017 fall, I guess it would have been October 2017, I won the 50 mile national champs, but it was like 85 degrees and 100% humidity on a freak fall day. And so it felt like it was kind of a fluke to myself, if not to everyone else, because you really can't, on rolling gravel roads in the heat, you just can't beat me over a 5 hour race. Like you could count the number of people on one hand if I'm having a remotely okay day that could throw down with me over something like that. It just really favored my talents and my skills and everything that I have to bring to the table. And then 6 months later, it was single digits Fahrenheit on the start line, so I wasn't going to be getting the heat that I had. And it was 5 20K loops for, or 25K loops, sorry, much worse, 25K loops for the 100K national championship on my birthday in 2018. And that was the only one of those qualifiers that had auto entry. And so I kind of figured with the current 50K national champ, the previous year's 100K national champ, it's like, I don't really have control over if I win this race or not. So let's just run safe and take care of myself. And instead, I ended up going out a little hot with those boys. I'm someone who I really, I've always envied the people that are like mature and know what they're capable of. And I do gather a lot of data and lean into the biohacking angle. But in the end of the day, I measure all these things so that I can be free on race day. And if the muse takes me, I was slowly forming into the person that I am now. I mean, this is 5 years ago now, and almost to the day, really. And what ended up happening was we all went out at 6:00 something mile pace, pretty much. And I didn't want to let those guys get away from me because it's good gravity to have around there. And at some point, I remember seeing those two passing off with each other and kind of racing against each other and thinking, well, that's it. I'm running for third. So I just have to run an impressive time and that'll be that. And at that point, I completely lost like the bounds of myself to the activity. And it was more than 4 hours without a single bit of internal dialogue, like not a single word in English went on in my head. And I really, really found something that I didn't think was that sustainable. And, you know, you can call it flow state, or you can say you're in the zone or this selflessness, timelessness, effortlessness sort of state. But it was huge. And so I ended up winning that race. It went to shit for those two dudes. But to have that experience instantly kind of nullified everything else that was there, all the external factors. And I've kind of been a flow junkie openly ever since then. and someone who's much more okay just chasing the muse. It's kind of like, as an 18-year-old kid, I didn't know that I could run as fast as I've run now and won the races that I've won now. And since I have so little to prove to myself or even my 15-year-old self from back in the day, I'm really just at liberty to kind of play around and take big swings and decide what I think is possible and really kind of court the muse instead of just chasing race results.
I think that's great. You know, that's not me. I'm more of like, you know, here's my plan. I'm sticking to it. And I think people like you make ultra running a lot more interesting, right? Because you're just like, I'm sending it. Who's coming with me? And it's like, well, I don't know. That seems too fast. But I think it really mixes up the results and can cause some pretty dramatic changes. And for those of us that may not be at a specific race, you know, being able to follow it online and being able to see those lead changes and people blowing up or people going out super hot, I think is really interesting. So I want to jump.
It's also,
yeah, go for
it's
it.
Also, it's also it's lent itself really nicely to transitioning over into OCR because there's so many other things that could go wrong. I mean, I could just like rip my hand open or pull a bicep or be unable to finish an obstacle and have to give up my running ability just in penalties or something ridiculous or mismanage heat or cold at World's Toughest Mudder. And so since there's so many other things that could go wrong, that that could make you respond with, okay, I'm going to try to conserve everything and take care of everything and shore it all up and, you know, problem solve. Or you could respond the way that I do, which is to push even harder into the unknown and just say, okay, well, if 100 things could go wrong that are out of my control, I'm just going to rage and just make hay while the sun's shining here. And so it's like my WTM experience, I was a little cold for like 8 hours. And then by the time that I realized that I was actually a little too cold, it was game over. I mean, everything pretty much shut down. But, you know, I wouldn't have changed basically anything that I did. If I could do it again, I would be tempted to do exactly the same mistakes even. So it's kind of, you know, I think the play and the fun aspect of it has always been worth more than just being conservative and doing what's reasonable. If I can meet God 25% of the time, then I'll give up whatever 50% of those races if I have to just run okay or run what I know I can.
Nice. Yeah, you know, you mentioned something about the cold. There's a huge, I think a lot of people getting into world toughest mode don't quite understand. There's a huge gap between like, hey, there's like, I'm fine, like I'm cold, and now there's like this giant gray area where it's like, and then you go into the black where it's like, all right, now I need medical attention. Like I need to reheat. And I like,
yeah, I mean, especially when you're training for it. Like, yeah. I mean, I had a couple real, I mean, meeting God, as I would say, sessions in the cold leading up to it. And so I was immune to the cold when I went in there, but I'm still like, I walk around at about 5.4% body fat on a DEXA scan.
Oh,
and
wow.
I got visibly substantially leaner going into WTM. I think just the type of training that I was doing and the big weeks that I was putting in. And I mean, you could see every little, I mean, I had veins on like my low back. Like it was kind of ridiculous. And so I don't think that I had a whole lot to deal with. And then of course, like running a half marathon, if your hands are cold to the touch, you're crushing. That's a great thing. It doesn't matter what the conditions are outside. Like you want to be cold. By the time that you get up to a marathon, it's like you want to be a little chilly just to keep the heart rate low and avoid sweating if you can help it. And that's true all the way up to about the 50 miler. And then as you get a little longer, it still behooves you to avoid dumping out sweat if you can and just drinking more. And so it was kind of a tough calibration. And the takeaway that I had that I would tell to someone else is, if you feel averse to getting cold at all, then you're too cold. Like if the idea of getting into chill pickle makes you feel that little unease in your stomach at all whatsoever, you need to put on extra clothing. And that was something that I needed the wisdom. I couldn't just get that through other people. And I needed the experience of going there and subjectively putting myself into that spot and seeing, calibrating really what my perception is.
So we mentioned I'm going to jump back in time. There's a lot of interesting things we can dive into. Jump in time to your first ultra, your first 50K. Did not go well. And then, you know, fast forward in time to you winning national championships. What changed in those 7 years? Like, what did you do? You know, what was your training like? What made that transformation happen?
I mean, I went from being a kid and kind of being interested in all this to contriving this entire life for myself where I can have all the access to all the things that I need. And I really mastered the whole fat adaptation and periodization. I mean, there's a few exceptions to it, but in my head, I never ran a 5-something hour 50K. I went from like death march 6-hour 50Ks right to like breaking 4 hours or running 4 hours and change over, you know, relatively gnarly trail 50Ks. And so I think the gap really was, it was putting in crazy volume. I mean, my junior year of high school, it was 60 miles a week. My senior year of high school, it was 60 with an occasional 80. As soon as I got out of high school, it was 80 with an occasional 100. Maybe a year or two later, it was hundreds on the reg, like back to back to back. And then, you know, an occasional 120 by a few years later. And so it was a very, very meticulous long game thing. I kind of knew that I wanted to be in this. I knew what it needed to look like. And I knew that I had a lot of time to kind of slowly develop those things. And so that's really how I came at it. It's the truth really is that it's everything. I mean, some of it is just spending more time being a body. I really think I've spent I have way, way more than my 10,000 hours with really mindfully being a human body, engaging in three dimensions and playing with the fourth dimension being time. And I think all that just it's wisdom, right? You really have to go there and put in the reps to get it. And that's the kind of stuff that has paid the biggest dividends for me as time goes by. But then especially in a dynamic world where I can log everything and be sort of meticulous and biohacky about it all, it's helped me a lot that I can peak real hard for these races. I mean, I can do stuff that was impossible 4 weeks before and go out on race day and just sustain it for hours and hours and hours. And there's just something about knowing your body that well, and then adding the intuition in with the objectivity of seeing however many 10-week blocks unfold and knowing exactly where I need to be at a different point, and then being able to really, really play with some fire by the end of that to make sure that I'm ready to soar real, real close to the sun.
Nice. Yeah. Love mention of the 10,000 hours and persistence and time. And I think a lot of people, when they jump into any sport or martial arts or whatever they're trying, is, you know, they're like, oh, how do I get as good as you? It's like, well, how long have you been training? They're like, a year. And you're like, yeah, we're not even close. Like, start putting more volume, more time, be persistent, be patient. You know, you can speed it up by being focused, obviously, but it still takes time and volume. And those numbers, that's some serious volume. That's like, yeah, very, very serious volume there.
Yeah. And it's kind of odd that I understand that humans want to be efficient, and we all want to buy and sell and exchange these secrets and act like we have some proprietary secret sauce. But I really don't glorify any of that stuff. I mean, the idea that I could do a certain type of training and expedite my results, it's like, why? Or people that are, well, this person's only running 35 miles a week and they're managing to do it all on cross training. And I'm like, but I don't like cross training. I like running. I want to train. You're completely ignoring the fact that I am a subject, not an object. Like, I'm not a box that we're putting physics problems over. And it matters what I'm doing day in, day out. And if doing it the way that I want to do it ends up costing me on the bottom line, then I just have to make sure that the high end is high enough that the bottom line isn't game ending.
Right. You know, you mentioned peaking. How, for the types of kind of endurance races you're doing, how many times are you peaking for races? Like, actually peaking versus like, hey, I'm gonna jump into this race just for like more training volume, or like a kind of a low priority race, like an A race type thing. How many times a year are you peaking for those?
I'm pretty comfortable doing 4 to 5 A races a year. I don't take an off season unless I'm forced to.
Okay.
Which is maybe not wise. I mean, I just turned 32, so maybe I'll figure out a way to maybe I'll have to change something as my body tries to turn into beef jerky.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm never out of touch with 100-mile weeks. Like, there hasn't been a point since I was 18 that at the drop, or 19, that at the drop of a hat I couldn't do 100 miles in a week. It's kind of like, that's what my life looks like if left to my own.
Okay.
And so it's, you know, if I just do a 10-mile run every morning and do a shakeout run in the evening and then do a long run, suddenly that's 100-mile week. Yeah. And so I'm never separated from that. And so I'm never out of shape, and I'm never mechanically not ready for that. And even through injuries, I've leveraged things like ridiculous sauna and heat training with blood flow restriction and a little bit of strength training and things that, a little bit of cross training even, and things that allow me to, as soon as whatever the issue is passed, boom, I hop right back into it. And so that's really where I've been for years and years and years. And so I think that's part of my secret there, is just that I can do them. I could throw them in back to back to back. And you know, again, maybe that'll have to change as I get a little older, but it does seem like there's really no point in having more, to my mind, in having more than about 10 weeks for a block. That would be 2 weeks, which would be postseason / preseason. In my case, it's both.
Yeah.
And then maybe a week to get the wheels spinning and run 60 to 70 miles or whatever this is, scale it to your mileage. And then have 6 weeks of sustained volume. And that might be 100 miles a week. That might be 125 or 120 or 140 even. And that's like a 4 to 6 weeks really for me. And then 2-ish weeks to taper. And there will be prep races mixed in there throughout. And then that's it. Then it slides right back into an A race. You know, you have 2 weeks down where you don't really have to train because your A race has beat you to hell and back.
Yep.
And then you're kind of right back into spinning the wheels and getting right back into it.
So I'm sure some of our listeners are hearing 100 mile weeks and their minds are being blown. So I know the follow-up questions are going to be, I got like a couple. So one, are you single or are you married?
Oh, I'm absolutely single right now.
Okay. So the next one follow-up was going to be day job. What's your day job?
This is it. My day job is running those miles. So
okay.
I will, like, here's a hilarious thing. And it's like, I am quick to give credit where it's due, that if you have a kid, it's a miracle. Like, that's a huge source of strength and love and light and bliss. And that's awesome. And obviously all my favorite people on the planet tend to be athletes or at least artists of some kind. And so I'm grateful that any of them choose to have kids, but it is going to cost you on your training volume, because I'll have things like when I'm monk mode, which is super strict training day in, day out, everything is the same. I mean, within half an hour, that's why I had this window so precisely to chat with you here.
Yeah.
Everything is pretty scheduled to within, yeah, I mean, definitely less than half an hour of precision in there. And that's kind of to combat, you can appreciate this with military history, that's to combat just the innate shit show that most people are, especially creatives and people that speak the way that I do and think the way that I do, if left to our own. And so, like, I'll get up at 8:15, I am, or 8 o'clock exactly, and I am outside by 8:15, and that's in cold water by 8:20. That's doing fascial maneuvers and rope flow. And if I need 20 minutes to do that, I have it. If I have 40 minutes to do that, I have it. And I'll scamper back inside shivering, and I'll hop in the sauna space, the infrared Faraday cage grounded sauna that I use. And then I'm doing morning pages and journaling and maybe some relaxed breathing with an audiobook or some artist way prompts or something to that effect, something sort of creative and to set the mood for the day. And then 90 plus minutes after I've been up and moving around and everything, I'll take whatever the supplements or drugs or whatever you want to call them for the day to get through the workout is, depending on, you know, bespoke to that workout. So you'll regularly see it'll be 10:30. I've only been up for 2.5 hours and I have done basically nothing but my morning routine. And so that is extremely elaborate. You know, you project that over a week and you're looking at 15, 16 hours a week. I mean, that's a side hustle right there, just for me to wake up and get ready for my runs. And then my runs are leisurely, and then I break the fast at the same time every day. And it really is full time. And there's just no way you could do all of that if you had any semblance of a life. So even when I am, like, you know, courting someone that I really care about, she will know that I am not a human being until about 1:30 p.m. It might be 1:20, it might be 1:45, but that's the time where I have broken my fast, I have eaten the sardines out of the can, I have taken my protein, I am done with my entire morning, and I can deeply engage with you for 3 to 5 hours until I basically begin that process again.
I love it. It's disciplined. It's a lot of focus. I'm impressed. Another follow-up question. What gives you the motivation to keep doing that, right? Because I think a lot of people will come into the sport or find something they really enjoy, do it for a couple of years, and then it'd be like, and then fall out of love with it or whatever. Like, what keeps you coming back, and what do you think is it that allows you to put in such high volume and such a disciplined schedule?
I mean, this is what I'm designed for. This is really, this is my communing with my creator or the universe, or I don't really buy into the idea of a sentient God, but I'm okay with the word God for sure.
Okay.
And it's autotelic, right? Like it's like trying to explain why good food or good sex or a good shamanic experience that shakes you and makes you cry is good. There's just something about it that it is definitively good for me. And I think there's a lot of value in trying a lot of things, despite my monomaniacal approach to life. I do think it's absolutely vital that you try a lot of things, because you have to know what you're, like, here to do in capital letters. You know, you really need to know. Otherwise, you're at a huge disadvantage. And the amount of talent it's going to take somebody to be able to not be all in and compete with somebody like me, it's a laughable amount of talent.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of liberating for me. And also I would like to think that it's liberating for the average person looking at it. It's like, well, if you don't love this, then go do something else. There's a big broad world out there. I really do this because I love it. And I've also learned, if somebody knew that 30 days of doing something would make them feel so good, then they would do it. The problem is, a lot of people, they intellectually know this, but they don't viscerally know this. And even on top of that, they might not fully believe it. Well, that's for them, that's not for me. Well, this person can meditate. Now I'm the only person in the Dharma Center that can't meditate. You know, I'm the only person, I never get a runner's high. And it's like, okay, you know, one, you're not a snowflake. And two, it's like, if you really, really knew what I knew, I believe that way more people would give up a lot more things and kind of be a little closer to my spectrum of things, because I just know the world where I eat the same bell pepper every single day for 60 days, 20 days in, I feel every bite. I feel every single chewing, every moment of mastication that I have to do to get those calories into my body is a challenge. And then something will just pop into place, you know, maybe 30 days, 45 days in, when everyone else has already quit, of eating the same thing every day, where it is like the greatest, most deep transcendental experience, no drugs involved. And that is worth anything to me. I mean, I will pay 8 weeks of my life, even if it was objectively horrible for those 8 weeks, and it never is, just so I could have 15 hours of bliss and like supreme. It's not even control. It's this beautiful place where control and a lack of control can perfectly coexist, where I'm not absolutely the one that's controlling anything. I'm kind of taken by the muse, but also I'm orchestrating all of this, and it's all one, and it just gets boiled into this pot. I'll give up anything to be able to have that. I mean, that's the kind of experience that you remember for the rest of your life. And if I have to spend 8 weeks building this rickety little house of cards that might get blown away in the breeze and miss out on that moment, I'll do that 100 times. I'll stoop and build it back up with broken tools, as Rudyard Kipling says.
So, I mean, it's the extreme end of delayed gratification, essentially, is what it boils down to, my understanding.
Yeah, which I would argue comes full circle right back into innate hedonism. Like, if you immediate hedonism, if you really turned your eyes on and said, okay, how do I get the most joy in the next hour? You'd sit around and you'd do cocaine. You'd put it on a credit card and you'd get some hefty drug that just got you somewhere. But if you expanded that to a 12-hour period, you already would change your decisions. If you expand that to 24 hours or 24 days or 24 weeks, then suddenly it's like, how much pleasure can I possibly cram into this human experience? And then what you quickly find is the human vessel that we get to embody can only handle so much. And I think it's worth training for that. I think a lot of people train to like embrace the grind or embrace the suck or whatever. But I think there's a lot more value in trying to embrace the joy, because what you find when you really engage with a lot of these joyous, light, mindful, it was Taoist sexual practice that really turned my eyes onto this initially. Like, how much bliss can I hold in this body before I get scared and throw it away? And I think that's a very good question with running too. It's like, what if I can just find the joy in movement and put my attention there? And then what if I do that for 6 months? What if I do it for 10 years? What kind of person would I become? And how quick would I be? How hard focused would my eyes be on all the love and light and joy and bliss and just being out there in the wilderness shouting? I think that really, it's hard for me to delineate that from just straight hedonism. Like, if I was just trying to make myself feel good, I think that's what I would do at this point. My eyes are on that brings me more joy over a 10-week period than anything else.
Yeah. Interesting. I always enjoy, you've always got some interesting insight on things. For our listeners, you went to Tough Mudder Infinity, Saudi Arabia, with all the other athletes, myself included. So I got to walk around downtown Alula for a day with you, and I got to hang out with you a little bit after the race. So I always find your perspective very interesting, and sometimes your my views and your views they strangely diverge and then merge on opposite ends. It's kind of interesting. I always just enjoy I enjoy listening to other thoughts and opinions on things. So yeah,
I think it means we're both onto something.
Yeah. So you mentioned this is your full time job. Ultra running is not known. I mean, it's not known for being the most wealthy sport, right? I mean, there's current talk in the news, obviously talking about like WNBA and Caitlin Clark, and you know, athletes pay. How have you managed to sustain a livable lifestyle, whatever that may be, as like essentially a full time athlete?
Well, I'm okay living on basically nothing. I think that's a major aspect of my charm.
Yeah.
That's a major bonus of being this character going through life. And so that's super helpful. And then I've leaned more and more into outlets that are not directly tied to running.
Okay.
Because I like to be weird and be a character, and I one of my greatest fears is that I'm not giving back to the world enough. I am not in the position to just be an anodyne white bread sort of character that runs real fast and wears Nike, you know, and knows how to hold my American flag over my shoulders and not cover up the Nike logo, which is something that I was instructed with Team USA stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not me. And the good news is running is so broke that you kind of have to do, initially I thought it was great because then you have to do other things. You have to coach, you have to read, you have to write, you have to engage, you have to put the fuck out into the universe. You can't just be a black hole and think that society ought to feed you. And, you know, one part that, one part starving artist, and you have a livable business option in there. But then as I've gotten older, I've leaned more and more into just like this biohacking angle. And obviously I have some more woo-woo sort of supplemental ways to engage with this as a sport that I believe have more and more crossover with everything else. Whereas someone who's just has ridiculous raw talent and happens to wear, you know, Salomon, like the Pulsars I love so much that I wore in Alula. It's like that person that has no personality, that just runs real fast and is safe for a big company to put logos on. They might sell some shoes, but they're not going to sell their truth. They're not really going to push a message, which is why big companies can bet on them. But also I don't, that's not livable for me. I couldn't possibly talk myself into thinking that that's an okay way to engage with the universe.
Gotcha.
So I would say I do a decent amount of writing, and I can make a solid number of affiliate sales at this point because I have slowly, meticulously vetted everything that I use, and 3 out of 4 things that I get sent, I don't like. They're not up to snuff. And then that 25-ish% of things make it onto social media of, hey, here's something that I'm trialing. And then probably about a third of those things end up viable, at least for a little while, for some sort of proper endorsement. And so I think those are numbers that someone, you know, that 18-year-old Anthony could engage with to kind of figure out where, how you end up with the non-negotiable $500 to $1,500 a month that you need to sustain your life.
Gotcha. Yeah, you do know incredible amount about the science of performance, the science of nutrition. I remember just kind of walking around talking to you and sharing your opinions on things. And we had a couple other people with us, and a couple of them were like, I was literally lost for 90% of that conversation. I was like, oh. I was like, I got lost a little bit too. Not quite for 90%, but some of the details we went into did start going over my head. I was like, wow, he is well researched. He's looked into things, tested things. But yeah, like I said, very meticulous is impressive.
Yeah, I think if you want to break the rules, it helps if you know what rules you're breaking and why. Yeah. I think it's I forget what they call that principle. I've seen it under a few different guises, but if you don't know why they built the bridge, then you can't take it down. But if you can explain to someone why this bridge is here, the history of the bridge, why it was up there, and you think I need to tear this down, then go ahead and tear it down. But you have to know what rules you're trying to break first. And so I think the melding and the transcending of all these things doesn't need to come from a place of ignorance. It needs to come from a place of just extreme education until you get to the end of the line and realize, okay, so science can make me maybe even healthy, maybe, but it certainly can't make me happy. It can't make me meet God, and it can't make me set world records. There's just, I mean, definitively it can't. So the athletes are always 10 to 15 years ahead. And so my affinity for science is ever more tempered by the fact that I'm doing this thing, and like I am the character here. Like I am the person moving these things, and that will spurn on future studies. And so, yeah, it's a balancing act for sure.
Yeah. So how did you get, like, you, obviously you're doing well in the ultra running world. Why decide to throw your hat into the obstacle course racing world? Why not just stay in the ultra running world?
It's really where my talent lies. If I could, the number of people that can run like I can is a non-trivial amount.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of people that can destroy me over a functional fitness workout of some kind, or like a ninja warrior kind of thing, is also an appreciable number of humans. But the number of people that can do 545 miles for many hours and can also do a set of 10 pull-ups.
Yeah.
There's like basically no one on the planet already. I mean, you could count them on both hands probably. And so it doesn't take a whole lot of finesse to cross over and feel competent enough in the at least the ultra OCR space. And it is that curiosity of like, what would this feel like? And then when there's so many places, when there's obstacles that you don't know what's coming, it does add a little bit more chaos that I am never bothered by, and a lot of people are. And especially the kind of nerdy engineering types that end up drawn into like solo ultra running. So I really think that if Spartan still had like livable contracts floating around, and someone could say, hey, you don't have to worry about covering your nut with any other outlet. We'll take care of you for this series, and here's your five races to do. And if you get second place all year round, then you'll make a living wage. It's like, all right, I could lean into that. So I really think it is the crossover between everything that I developed and everything that I just have that's just given to me by the universe.
Gotcha, gotcha. All right, so we talked a little about your entrance into the obstacle course race world. You also, as we mentioned previously on the earlier on the podcast, that you were at Al Ula, Saudi Arabia's big, largest prize money race in OCR history earlier this year. To share to me your thoughts on the experience or the race, anything you want to talk about from that event, just because I think this is just a very unique and interesting event.
It was incredible, man. That was my first time in the Middle East. And as you and me were kind of bullshitting around town, it's like I picked up whatever, two dozen Arabic words. And I like to think that I won some cred with some of the race organization. I had a moment. I don't think it was Duncan. I think it was whoever his secondhand man out there is. And one of the other elite athletes sneezed and immediately, Alhamdulillah. And he's like, oh, nice. Man, you're a local. I was like, yeah, that's right. And so I, you know, looking the way that I do, I like to think that it doesn't take a whole lot, and I take the languages pretty well. So I was excited to, you know, in my pantheon, I was excited to see if me and Allah were on good terms or not, and go over to the Middle East and kind of connect with that dirt microbiome and race somewhere that was historic for human history. I mean, Al Ula at the time of the Fertile Crescent was probably connected to all of that with fertile, livable, good conditions for humans. So it's debatably where the first camels were domesticated, I found out. And there's like whatever, tens of thousands of archaeological sites. So for me, it was the cultural experience and a chance to connect with a new part of the world. And I definitely had mixed feelings about just how much I loved the area. I thought Saudi was really cool. I have a lot of respect for the fact that the royal family likes us enough to put up some money like that. That seems like the world needs more of it. I mean, you're not supporting rich athletes getting richer like you are in a sport like golf, maybe. You're really supporting people that wouldn't otherwise be able to live a normal life. And so obviously that's loaded with my own personal bias. But I also went through Dubai and spent whatever, more than 10 days there on the trip, and it was incredible. That's another thing where like I've been told all this stuff that I'm supposed to feel some kind of way about that area or the people over there or the cultures or what have you. And all I can experience. And I know I'm coming at it from a place of, you know, a straight white male with an American passport, but man, I loved it over there. So I will be back as soon as someone offers me a good juicy chance to get back there.
Yeah, it was cool. And I was impressed that you were the only person I met on the entire trip that took the time to like learn a little bit more about the language and learn a little bit more about the culture before you got over there. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah,
And
I appreciate it, man. I was like 70 days into Duolingo, so I have like, I don't know, like I'm confident with double vowel sounds and double consonant sounds now, which is progress since I even left. And I have about 25% of the alphabet like really dialed. Like I can read it, I can write it, I can sound it out. So by the next time I come back there, that was one of the things that I said to you. I just want to be able to read things. I don't need to know what I'm saying. I just want to be able to read it.
Yeah. Now, honestly, once you learn the alphabet, everything becomes a lot easier, right? Like when I learned Farsi, the first 2 months was just like learning the alphabet and figuring out what the sounds they made. And then once, at least for Farsi, I'm not gonna speak for Arabic because my Arabic is pretty poor. But once I knew what the words said, then it was, to me, it was as easy as learning Spanish. Farsi was. I think Arabic has a little more, their conjugations and their vowels are. I mean, their conjugation, their verbs are a little harder and more nuanced. But for Farsi, it was like learning Spanish for me. So, yeah, good
Nice, man.
stuff.
Yeah, that's good feedback. That's good beta.
Yeah, the and you're 100% right. Like, if you just know a couple of phrases, people will warm up to you very quickly. Because again, random white dude showing up to their country, and if you know a couple of phrases, they're like, oh, you took the time to spend. You know, even if it's just 10 minutes on YouTube, like researching a couple of common phrases, like the fact that you put in a little bit of effort ahead of time really shows like you care a little bit more about their culture. So I think that's a good call and good for anyone else who's heading over there. During the race, I know a couple of Arabic phrases. I got to yell at someone in Arabic because he was waiting. He wasn't jumping out of the tube on like the Augustus Gloop type obstacle. And I was like, come on. I was like, brother, let's go. Hurry up. Yell in Arabic, and I came out. My teammates like, were you just yelling at that dude in Arabic? I was like, yeah, he was just kind of sitting there. I was like, I was nice about it, but
dude, hell yeah, yeah. I also, you know, being, I don't know, weird like I am. I also have quite the thing for holy books, and I think if you were a robot, and you were intrigued by the idea of God. I believe you would pick the Quran as your holy book of choice. I think it has one of the better arguments that it is the word of God. Now, obviously, I don't agree with many things in there or people's implementation of most religion. I really don't agree with personally, but I think it's done a lot of good in the world. Maybe it's a mixed bag. Maybe not. Not really the venue to get into it. But I think the Quran has a really good argument for being the actual word of God, and so people that put faith in that or have built a culture around that, I think if I wasn't willing and excited to give them credit where it was due, I think I would owe them that anyway. And so I think being in an Arabic speaking place and a predominantly Muslim place, I think it was great. I really think I connected with some of that, and I like to think that I'm permeable enough to absorb some of that.
Yeah. I'm going to politely disagree, but we're not going to go into a deep religious argument on the podcast.
Part two.
we'll get
you on my show and we'll get into it.
Okay. Okay. I'm an Orthodox Christian, right? That's what I believe. And I spent a lot of time in the Middle East. I don't necessarily agree with a lot of the things there, but I also can show respect and I can understand someone who's, like a faithful Muslim. I can understand their discipline and their allegiance and their beliefs. Like, I understand there's a lot more in common as far as, like, again, how someone lives their lifestyle with rules and that they believe from a higher calling. You know, I feel that respect and I can understand that. And, you know, my deployments to Iraq, I mean, I've put myself in harm's way for Muslims and they've put themselves in harm's way for me. So, you know, all people trying to get by here. So.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And then how did the race go for you? Quick on the actual course.
I mean, it was fine until it started. I was sick like 10 days before I took off, and I live a clean enough life that like stuff really doesn't bother me. It was more that my data showed that I was sick than I actually felt anything, and kind of licked that and got back to normal data and handled the jet lag way better than I've ever handled it. Really, really hacked the travel with methylene blue and KE4 by ketonade, like taking a proper ketone ester that really elevates you. And I think I kind of biohacked my way into really, really solid travel experiences, but something about it just stayed in there. I don't know if there was anything else I could have done or if I did everything that I could. And I woke up and my lungs, I couldn't get a 50% full breath from maybe 70-ish minutes into the race. And so I was like, well, I'm here to run 8 hours, so I'm gonna run 8 hours. And if all I have is a jog while like slowly sipping sea level air, then so be it. That's just, you know, that's God's will, clearly. And so I tried to just roll with that, and it was not pleasant at all. I like running free. I like running fast. You know, again, that's why I'm willing to give up 12-week blocks, or, you know, air quotes, give up 12-week blocks of my life to be able to have some transcendental experience for 3 or 4 or 12 hours, and to be robbed of it due to something silly like that. It was a lot of feelings out there, but yeah. I insisted on reminding myself that like I'm in an oasis. I'm in a freaking Indiana Jones movie out here.
Yeah,
you know, I,
yeah.
I am in somewhere that's significant to human history, that's beautiful, and I love the desert. I mean, I basically live in the desert. I live where the desert meets the mountains, and I could live anywhere that I want to, and it's not the easiest place to live here, and I'm still here. It's like, you know, Durango, Colorado is incredible, and so to travel all the way across the world and kind of like pit my desertiness, my desert rat status against everyone else's felt really aligned for me. And so the call to return is huge. And yeah, it was miserable, really, to spend that long having to mindfully breathe, because the second I lost myself in a moment, which only happened 3 or 4 times, and accidentally took a 60% full breath, I was coughing miserably, like almost to the point where I had to stop. And so I just kind of gently sipped air and jogged around, and that was that. It never really got slower. It never got faster. It never got better. It never got worse. It was just kind of miserable by an hour and a half or 2 hours in, and stayed there. Obviously the obstacles were nothing crazy, so I didn't miss anything. Nothing was too strained on that, which felt like a success. And to get another race under my belt, since I'm such a baby in this world, and just make sure that nothing did change was worth any experience out there. And yeah, I mean, I'm okay dropping out of a race if I need to, but the goal was to spend 8 hours communing with this place and exchanging microbiome with this sand and being out there. And so there was no world where dropping out was a thing. It was like, I'm going to run these 8 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. It was super cool. The environment was cool. The land was cool. And like you said, the history, I thought the history again, you know, Saudi Arabia is part of the holy area of Islam, right? So Mecca, Medina are in the country. So just opened to tourism a couple of years ago. So I was surprised at how welcoming it felt for tourists. That was what was surprising to me. I was expecting a little more, I don't know, I guess, I don't know if hostility is the right word, but just like, you know, yeah, less welcoming. Yeah.
I mean, we're not nice to tourists in Durango. it's like fucking Texas, spend all your money and go home. Like,
yeah,
get out of here. Oh yeah, the train's great. You know where you should go to eat? You should go to Taco Bell for dinner. It's like you don't give locals, you don't give people from out of town until they've been here for like 6 months, like you don't give them anything. Like, they don't deserve it. Oh yeah, man, maybe you can share where your hot springs parts are. That'd be cool. Yeah, no, I'm not going to. Like, you don't deserve it.
Oh man. All right, so let's talk about the tryouts event thing you have coming up, which was finally the impetus to get you on the podcast, because I've been saying I've been going to bring you on for a while now. Talk to me about that, kind of what that is, where you're going with it, et cetera.
Well, I'm in the position where I don't need to rent out. I have a 1,300 square foot mobile home in Durango that's got all these fancy ass toys that I talk about. I mean, we have a hypoxic air generator, which you can flip it around and get hyperoxic air. So you can kind of gerrymander your oxygen altitude requirements for the day. We have the red mill here, the sauna, the streams flowing again for the next 5-6 months, which is low 30s. I mean, there's ice around the rim still. And we're at 6,800 feet, which is basically textbook perfect altitude, right outside town. And this is really, it's the place that I've built for myself to thrive. And the house is stocked with everything you could possibly ask for. But by sharing it, it really doesn't detract anything from that experience. And if I could share it with people that want to hustle and be proactive and grow this dream in whatever angle they really want, but in a team environment where we're all trying to train together and support each other, that would just add to the experience. And since I've already built this, I'm finally at the point now where I feel like I could do a proper tryout, and we're going to shoot loads of content. And this is May 6th to the 10th. So it's a work week. It's a Monday to Friday. So even people that are racing on the weekend before, the weekend after would be open to. I still have 2 slots. I could probably make a third even that are open. So people, if this goes live quick enough, then people can hop on a plane and I'll pick you up from the airport. You don't need anything other than your flight and your food while you're here. And we're just going to do things that are relevant to a team. So I have a bunch of quirky runs planned. I have a night on the town planned. We have a couple sponsors that have offered basically the same contract that I get for collab posts, where there's a few $100 up for grabs for people to support their training and their racing and whatever. And so it'll be, you know, imagine a format where we're all going to sit around at 10 a.m. on Thursday. And we just had our morning routine. We're all sitting around on our phones and we're all going to make a collab for a, you know, XYZ company for Wookiee. We're going to make a collab and the winner will be determined by Wookiee at 10:30. And that will be determined and announced. The only announcement we'll get is they accepted the collab, and then boom, that person, you just got a few $100, couple $100 to pocket. And that'll cover your travel from getting out here or your next race or what have you. And then anyone that's selected to get through this program. So people that really get it, people that are building, this is already more than I've given in my post, but I'm looking for people that are proactive, that are looking to build a community here. And that's the three people I've already invited are they're people that I trust to build community, to like, save, comment, share, you know, people that are okay playing with the realm of the modern athlete that also are people that I am guessing would be fun to hang out with and would offer a variety of, I don't want cookie cutters. I don't want yes men. I want people that are different than me, and people that would make a, like you and me were just talking, like religious stuff, like people that want to stir the pot with me. That's how we all end up being more valuable tribe members and therefore making more as athletes and contributing more as artists. And so that's really what I'm looking for, is people that want to dive into that completely. And so for anybody that passes this tryout period with flying colors, they'll be immediately invited to stay through the following camp, which is an open camp, May 16th to the 20th. And that camp has, I think, 2 slots left open in it right now. And that's another one where, like, really, I don't think I'm going to tell anybody no. If someone comes in and says, hey, I want to do it, I'll say, well, you're going to have to do the pullout in the family room or something. But since we're all on the same wake up and sleep schedule, it shouldn't really be an issue. But yeah, so they'll automatically be able to offer that mentorship, and where they're coming from, they're serious athletes in their own rights already. And so to be able to offer that out to the world immediately will kind of be an extended tryout period. And then pretty much anybody that makes the trip and can hold their own will get an offer to be here for 3 months rent-free, to be able to use all of my stuff, use all the sponsor swag in the house. And if done right, I think that's a long enough period where you'll be able to, you could establish yourself full time. I fully believe that. And they'll come in and get spoon fed, you know, really light, casual sponsor contracts, both with things that I believe over a single training block will help them immensely. And then that'll obviously feed into it, because if you win more races, people care what you stand for more. Mm-hmm. And also just kind of liberate them. If all it was a training block and learning some secrets around here, I'm okay with that. If it ends up being a long-term thing and, you know, they come in here and quit a job or take a hiatus, you know, one of the guys has a big boy job. It's like, if he ends up taking a 3 month hiatus or whatever you'd call it, and ends up bringing in a couple $1,000 and living on free rent and decides this is the dream, then maybe he'll double down and do it for a full year or two or what have you. So I'm trying to offer people what I wish existed. And so here we are. I've obviously, I filled my house and emptied my house twice now, and both times I've gotten a little closer to, I've informed my decision, turned my eyes on to what I need to ask of people to have the right people that are really gonna put out and give back to the world, and are not just looking for, you know, if your only option is living with your mom or living with me, I don't really want you. I really need people that that are seeing this as an opportunity and are ready to proactively give me more than they're taking, or take, you know, it roughly equal would be totally fine. And obviously, if I'm doing that with five or six people, we're all going to very quickly have huge reaches and be making some waves for companies that we really believe in.
Cool. I mean, it sounds amazing. I think that's awesome that, again, I really like it when people are like, well, this should exist and it doesn't exist. And then you're like, well, if no one's going to do it, I'm going to do it. I think there's a lot of value to that. And really think that that's cool. If someone's listening or maybe has a friend and they think that they fit your type of person, type of athlete you're looking for, how do they get in contact with you or get out to this tryouts/camp?
Yeah, I mean, they can drop me an email. We can put that in there. They can drop me a DM. Obviously, a crap ton of my life is through Instagram. You'll get a more thorough answer and a quicker response to me through an Instagram DM, even if it's filtered out, than you will through even a text or a call or what have you. So I would say reach out through social media and click in with me that way. That's ultimately what we're going to be leaning on anyway, because that's the thing. Where I have a full-time media guy moving in July 1st ish.
Oh,
and
nice.
He's pretty much his the way that he's earning his rent. He's a young media minded dude that's mountain biking semi-professionally, and he's going to thrive. I mean, he's going to crush here, obviously. And his primary role is to just ask us what the hell we're doing when he sees that we're doing something weird. So yeah, I mean, I think anybody that even if they need to develop some of the skills to get in there or develop some of the athleticism, I think they shouldn't be intimidated by that. And if you know someone that this sounds like the dream for them, then this is the best way to find out.
Awesome. I love that. And that's a very smart move, bringing a media guy in. The content I've produced with like a professional media guy is exponentially better than the crap I put out by myself.
Yeah, for sure.
It's just next level. I mean, it looks, you can tell how much better it is. So definitely.
And we're looking for mostly it's candid and accessible. It's like, if you want to know what we're doing, show up on the porch for a morning routine. You know, if you don't live here, show up at the airport and just tell me when, and I will pick you up and I will house you and I will feed you, and you can stay here, and you don't need to, you know, I do consults, a 2-pack for $200. And I think it's the best value in coaching. You know, if you're a total shit show, that might be 10 days. We might check in. You might have 4 or 5 really basic things to deal with. And then in 10 days, you might say, I'm floundering. I can't even take care of these things. And we'll check back in. For someone who's a little more put together, it might be 60 days or 90 days apart, where you just check back in and then you run your own program and everything's great. The alternative to that is always, well, don't pay me. Don't schedule this. Let's not do this virtual. Show up at my house and just spend a week here. Spend your money on a ticket to the La Plata County Airport, and I'll pick you up and house you. And so that's really the angle we're looking for. It's less, although there's a place for the real clean, sexy, slow motion, you know, running the mountains and drone shots. The angle that we're going to lean, that I'm imagining the direction is that it's going to be just candid. Hey, this looks weird. What are you doing? Why are you doing this? What does this give you? And that will naturally bleed into products that we endorse and things that I've found that really, really work.
Gotcha. Say the dates and location again for people.
So Durango, Colorado, and May 6th to the 10th is okay. The tryout week. And then May, what did I just say? 16th to the 20th is the open camp. And there's a post about each one of those on my Instagram as well, so we can nab dates off there. But it's the 6th to the 10th and the 16th to the 20th.
Gotcha. And what's your Instagram handle so people can find you?
It's at Anthony Kunkel, and that's phonetic, K-U-N-K-E-L.
Simple enough to find. Gotcha. Anything else?
Yeah, those are serious camps. I mean, I'm looking to give you everything that I have as an athlete, along with all the wisdom that goes into it, and a chance to really experience everything that I endorse. From lifestyle things to local food, all the way to, you know, the supplements and the sauna and the things that, like, I make a few bucks if you go home and buy. And so it feels so right to be able to show someone in the real world how this stuff integrates into your life or doesn't, as the case may be. And then to show off Durango, where, again, I could live anywhere I want to, and this place is the best. And so to show off where I live and make it accessible to people, it means the world to me. So you can expect world-class body work. You can expect an elaborate as hell morning routine every day. You can expect some elite athlete mentorship from people that have done this at the top level, as well as like our breath worker that we use, holotropic breath work, which is a transcendental psychedelic tear inducing experience. And her business cards say the midwife of souls. I mean, she is not fucking around. And it's like, that's booked on the 7th and the 17th already. And it's like, that's by the time that you leave here, your life will be changed. Whether you're here for the tryout or you're here afterwards, I think the only goal that's worthy of these camps right now, as I've slowly begun to formulate it, is I'm looking for a chapter in your book. I'm looking for you to be someone after you come here, for you to be someone that's worthy of writing a book, that can write a decent book, and that I'm ending up with a chapter in it, because that's all I'm wanting, you know, or maybe a few paragraphs. It's like, I don't need you to write a book about me. I'm not your fucking guru, but I am looking to change your life for the better and turn you into someone who, whatever your angle for the world is or whatever your vision is, that you're doing it at such a higher level than you would have imagined after being able to kind of cherry pick the things that you want from here. I have some secrets, and they'll help people beyond just running faster.
Nice. I mean, yeah, with a lot of opportunities kind of drying up in the States for things, I think this is really cool. And yeah, I'm excited to see some content that you guys produce from the camp. And feel free to tag Strength and Speed, and we'll reshare some of it and help spread the word about some of the good work you're doing to support athletes. I think that's super cool.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. I really do. The support's validating, and I'm looking to throw it back again in the fall. I do a few camps a year. This is really the flagship one, is Project Mayhem, which is a Fight Club reference for people who are well read.
Nice.
And so this has kind of been the flagship program where all my practitioners know what's going to happen every year, and I've sold it out the last 2 or 3 years. And obviously, I barely even charge for it. But yeah, sold out is sold out. And so I'm looking to throw it back again with a fall camp. I'm looking to have another fall tryout. And I've already had two athletes that said, hey, the timing's not right, but this is what I want. And so we'll probably have another, if I have the space for it, in a perfect world, without the money that I was planning on in Alula, things are a little bit set further back for my own chunk of land out here in Durango, but I should be able to seal the deal with it in time for fall anyway. And to be able to have another tryout where maybe I have, you know, 5 or 6 slots for full timers instead of functionally 2 or 3.
Gotcha. Anything else about the camp that /tryouts that I have not asked that you want to share with people? I think.
No, man. I mean, I think I felt free to just kind of riff there. So
yeah.
I'm feeling happy about it.
I think I got the big wave tops. If people want more, again, they can find you on Instagram. They can dig through some of your posts and then direct message you and find out some follow-up questions. Oh,
yeah, I'm extremely accessible.
Are the names public? Who's going? Can we know that, or is that we keeping that close hold right now?
It's quiet just because I'm waiting until everyone books all of their stuff and they're 100% in.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I want to make sure that I give credit where it's due and don't give credit where it's not due.
Fair enough.
And so yeah, I have 3 people that I've picked. I'm looking at about a 50% acceptance rate right now, and I'm looking at 3 or 4 people four that got the invite, 3 whose timing is right and who seem to be making it work.
Nice.
And then I will have all of that. It'll be announceable in like 2 weeks or so, but I don't know. I wouldn't mind a little bit of tension to just see who shows up here.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. All right. I think that hits most of the major topics I wanted to cover. I feel like we could deep dive into various subjects for multiple episodes if we need to. Before we get going though, quick, since you're a guest on the podcast, we like to ask people, tell us something people would be surprised to know about you. So we can go any direction you want with there.
Yeah, dude, that's really tough. I think if I'm letting my life inform that, the biggest thing people are surprised when they meet me is that I am like 5'7" on a good day. I that honestly, that's That's the 80-20. That's the 80% of feedback that I get when people meet me the first time. They think that Winston, my dog, is like some 60-pound wolf dog. He's 27 pounds. And people think that I am just a monster of a man. So I'm not real sure how that fits into everything, but that's definitely what I've received is the most surprising.
That's really funny. Yeah, I used to do a lot of bodybuilding, powerlifting, strength training stuff. And when I first started getting to OCR, I had someone tag me in a post once, like, "Yeah, us big guys," and he tags me, and I was like, "What?" It's like, I am 5'6". I was like, I am 155 pounds. I was like, I am, yeah, that is, I am not a big guy. But at the time, I was doing a lot of like strength training, so I was real lean. And yeah, like if there's nothing of reference next to me, it's hard to tell how big someone is. So
yeah, casting a bigger shadow, man.
Yeah, so that's why a lot of the like Olympia level bodybuilders, they look huge on stage because they're all like 5'5", 5'5", 5'6", because.
And then you see Brian Shaw walk onto the stage, like whatever show that was.
Yeah, yeah. And that one's even worse because he's on stage with the giant killer. What's his name? I've met him a couple times. I met him once. Sean Clarita. He's on stage with Sean Clarita, who's like essentially the lightweight Mr. Olympia. So his max weight was like 202, and he's really short. He's like 4'10".
Oh Jesus! Yeah,
and then Brian Shaw's, you know, preposterously large,
6'8" or something. Yeah,
but there's other ones with like him and Jay Cutler, who's like, I think like 5'7", 5'8" or something, and he still he just makes him. It's like it makes it look funny.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, final shout out you want to give, friends, family, sponsors, etc. Go for it.
No, man, I think people can find me on Instagram and hunt me down for any sort of endorsements. I'll thank you for taking the time and getting me on here and helping me push my quirky agenda onto the world. And I think I like to think that I'm doing some good for somebody. So time will tell, but yeah, man, I think thanks to anybody that made it this far and is okay listening to me harping on. I hope it made your run or your workout better if that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I hope it can help you, you know, bring you a little more joy and a little less grit to maybe try on some of the ideas that I like to play with. And yeah, man, if people want more from me, they can find it on Instagram. And dropping this month and slowly becoming public is my own podcast.
Nice.
And I'm doing a different co-host each season so that we can dive into different areas of expertise. I think I'm a pretty broad reaching person, so having a different nerd for each season is helpful, or hippie as the case may be. And so the Gritless podcast, where you can find more joy with less grit, will be slowly dropping and people can engage with that.
All the normal podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all
that
stuff.
I believe so. That's kind of out of my hands. I'm a complete Luddite with all that. So as long as it's up on Spotify, I feel like that's enough, but that might just be my own bias. So I'm open to feedback.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look for that. And thanks again for coming on. Last question. Will we see you at World's Toughest 2024? That's my last question.
Well, it's in Florida, so it's warm, right?
Yeah, it is in Florida.
Yeah, and they don't have prize money announced yet, right?
I think they just dropped it earlier this week, if I remember correctly.
I mean, if it's 10K again, I have a few sponsors that would make sure that I can match that. That is teetering on worth my time.
Okay.
I would definitely love to come back. I mean, to make that clear, if the organization said, hey, you put on a show, you brought a bunch of new eyeballs to us, here's an entry fee, and like I already have the wetsuit set up, and like I have a relationship with Xterra now, and I have a lot of things, but it really doesn't favor me to support someone that is actively not supportive of people trying to live my lifestyle, right? So
I found the results. I found the announcement. 5,000 for first, 2,500 for second, 1,000 for third for individual.
Yeah, if you see me on the start line, it's because somebody offered me an entry and because I'm at least matching that prize money over once. It's not worth the abuse for $5,000 if you end up spending $2,000 to make it all happen.
Yeah.
And so that's just not, you know, to miss 3 months of good racing, which is really what it is. I don't care who you are. You will not race again for not to your potential for about a day per mile raced. And that holds true even for ultra stuff. It just now, even running a 100 miler and then 60 days later trying to run a 5K, it's like 2.5 miles in, you're dead, and it's just still in your system somewhere. And yeah. So I would need a at least a living wage through winter for that. So I would love it. I just don't know where it's going to come from, because the support with Tough Mudder historically hasn't been here.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to see that change. I would like to see a bunch of things change, and kind of like the camp itself, since no one else is willing to do it. Daddy's just going to have to step up and take care of this shit. So that's where we are.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thanks for coming on. Good input there. And hopefully see you at the start line. I'm not sure. I'm not even sure what I'm going down as. I might go down as media this year. I don't know.
Nice.
We'll see.
Well, yeah. Keep me on mind for whatever, Evan. You know where my heart's at, so you know what I'm good for and what I'm not good for.
Gotcha.
So I feel like you could vet me for any damn near anything. So
gotcha. All right. Well, thanks again for coming on. Our listeners, head over to teamstrengthspeed.com. Again, we got Blegman's up for sale there. I got my books up for sale there. And if you're interested more about some of the techniques I've used to kind of make money off the sport, my book, The Sponsored Athlete, is up on my website and off Amazon. You can also get it on digital on Amazon. So it talks about some of the ways I've reduced costs and made money from racing. You can check that out. It's 100 pages, quick read. Knock it out in a night or two if you're really focused. All right. Thanks again, Anthony. And we will catch you guys in the next episode.
Yeah, Evan, see you soon, man.
All right. Later.